Welcome to Power Play, today when new jobs went to familiar faces as front bench cabinet assignments were handed out by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. It's a larger gender balanced cabinet of 36 ministers, 17 from Ontario, 10 from Quebec, one each from Atlantic Province, one from Manitoba, four from BC, zero from Alberta and Saskatchewan. Coming up, Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland is standing by to discuss her new role, which was abandoned under the Harper governments and the first Trudeau mandate. Also, we have experts on the personalities in the major assignments, and our all-star strategist and top-of-the-pyramid press gallery will all search for meaning in the people twinned to their new portfolios. And yes, there were bombshells exploding at the Trump impeachment inquiry. We go to Washington for the latest. But first, let's get to the heavyweights in the new cabinet backing Prime Minister Trudeau as he defends a minority government at a time of rising alienation in two provinces without Liberal MP representation. The key change, we'll see Chrystia Freeland given the Prime Ministerial backup job with dedicated responsibility to keep peace with the provinces. Her replacement, energetic Quebec MP François-Philippe Champagne, who will stick-handle ongoing trade problems with China. And there will be new ministers aimed at easing tension between energy interests, that's now with Shea Miss O'Regan in natural resources, and environmental protection with Jonathan Wilkinson. Some ministers are staying put in senior portfolios that they had before the election. Finance stays with Bill Morneau, National Defense with Harjit Sajjan, Justice with David Lametti, Innovation with Navdeep Bains, Indigenous Relations with Carolyn Bennett, Transportation to Marc Garneau, and Marie-Claude Bibeau stays in Agriculture. Here is the Prime Minister on his new cabinet.
We recognize that this parliament will be one in which collaboration, in which working with a broad range of parties and indeed stakeholders across the country is going to be incredibly important. And the team that we've assembled here is a team that is going to focus on working hard every single day for Canadians, and I'm extremely excited about getting to work with them.
All right, let's whiz through the significant names and portfolios list with CTV Auto Bureau Chief Joyce Napier. Let's get your snapshot 30-second analysis here, Joyce. Chrystia Freeland gets that backup job for the Prime Minister. What do you think? Tough job?
A super tough job, and maybe too big a job for one person. It's the Minister for Canadian Unity for all intents and purposes. That's what intergovernmental affairs really means. It is the Canada-US file, which she keeps as well, and she becomes Deputy Prime Minister. Now, it really will depend on how much margin the Prime Minister gives her, but that is a very big job. She'll be the number two person in Cabinet. She will be replacing the Prime Minister when he's not there, and she's a mother of three, so we wish her luck.
All right, energetic Quebec MP François-Philippe Champagne, he replaces her in foreign affairs. He's got some pretty serious stick handling ahead, doesn't he?
Yes, but, you know, the thing that puzzles me is that he doesn't get the Canada-US file, which is really the biggest and most important relationship for a foreign affairs minister. So that is something that, you know, I'm trying to explain to myself why somebody like that wouldn't inherit that file as well. But he will have a lot of fish to fry. I mean, the relationship with China, Saudi Arabia, I can go on and on. So he yeah. will be a busy person. But truly, Canada-US should go to foreign affairs.
Seamus O'Regan's interesting. He had some struggles in Veterans Affairs and Indigenous Services. He's got a rather big challenge for a guy who seemed to underperform in his previous portfolios, didn't he?
Okay. Well, you know, Seamus O'Regan is quite an interesting one. He was, you know, the second or the third Indigenous Services Minister, and that is the more puzzling. That is the questions that we are most asking. I mean, this was supposed to be the priority for this government, Indigenous reconciliation, and, you know, it seems to be a revolving door in that portfolio. So now it's natural resources. That's a pretty huge portfolio. And is he experienced enough to do that? He's a very good communicator, obviously. But I think the job there was given to someone that the Prime Minister knows and loves and trusts. And I can understand that you would want to surround yourself with people you know and you trust, especially in a minority mandate.
Yeah, one thing that's kind of interesting, Mark Miller, he's a boyhood friend of the Prime Minister. He gets Indigenous services. That's not exactly a friendly assignment. That's going to be a big challenge too, isn't it?
But maybe he is the right guy for the job. So far, they really haven't been doing so well with it. So is he the man for the job? I mean, isn't he the MP that spoke Mohawk in the House of Commons? This is someone that has a very good reputation. Again, somebody that Justin Trudeau trusts, a boyhood friend. They went to school together in Montreal. And you know, you actually notice it when you start going through all these cabinet ministers that a lot of them are people that are trustworthy, or the Prime Minister obviously thinks are trustworthy. Now, are they as competent as they are trustworthy? I think that is the big question.
All right, just one quick one, because you used to know Quebec politics, still do Quebec politics pretty well. Stephen Guibeau in Heritage. Why not environment? How do you think he's going to do?
Well, you know, I mean, he's in Heritage. They could have given him any portfolio. I believe once he sits in cabinet, once he is one of those privy councillors, he will counsel the Prime Minister on environmental issues because that's the job he had before. When we attended, cabinet retreats, Guilbeau was there to brief the cabinet on environmental issues. When he met the first time with the premiers of the whole provinces when he became prime minister in his first mandate, guess who was there counseling him and giving him advice? Stephen Guilbeau. So, he's in Heritage, but he will definitely be talking about environment, and he won't be sort of a more controversial character because I don't think the Trudeau government needs another controversial environment minister.
You're right about that, Joyce. All right. Thanks for sticking around at Rideau Hall for us. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. And now, for the first time since 2006, we can introduce you to Canada's Deputy Prime Minister. She's also juggling the tricky intergovernmental affairs portfolio to keep the peace with provinces. Chrystia Freeland joins me in the studio. Congratulations, I think.
Yes. Well, thank you, Don.
I do want to ask you. I mean, you had a chance to get away from Donald Trump and just deal with some cranky premiers, but now you're taking on the Trump White House still on trade issues over our free trade, and provinces like Doug Ford and Scott Moe and Jason Kenney, and you're chairing a major cabinet committee. Are you not taking on too much?
I like working hard.
Your kid's going to ask for ID when you walk in the door.
I did warn my kids they might not be seeing me that often, and they said, that's okay. They've been seeing me a lot during the election campaign.
They're bored of you already.
So, yeah. They're happy to get me out of the house. They're tired of my cooking.
Okay, but no, it's a lot. Yeah. Can you really solve the puzzle that's Alberta? You went to school there and university there. You know what it's like. Can you solve that puzzle, deal with U.S. issues which are flaring up, and, you know, sort of stick handle through as Deputy Prime Minister?
Well, just to get facts straight, I was born and raised in Alberta, but I didn't go to university there.
Okay.
It's a big job the Prime Minister has asked me to do. Mm-hmm. I think he has asked all of his ministers to do big jobs. And frankly, I think this is a moment in the life of our country when we have some big challenges we have to meet. And it is a privilege to put my shoulder to the wheel and do what I can to help. I do think that actually continuing to oversee the Canada-US relationship and serving as Intergovernmental Affairs Minister are really complementary tasks, because I think that what we really learned during the NAFTA negotiations about the Canada-US relationship is we handle it best when we work as a team.
Right.
And one of the things that I want to sort of bring to the federal-provincial relationships is a reminder to us all that the reason the NAFTA negotiations were successful is we listened to each other very, very well and very carefully. Mm-hmm. We understood we were facing really an existential challenge, and we played as a team. And I think that's the approach that we have to take to all of the big domestic challenges our country is facing. And I do want to say, speaking for the federal government, it's got to start with us, and it has to start with us listening really, really hard.
They want you to listen, but they also want action, you to be backed with the power to do action Do you have the power? As the prime minister said, this role is not to send to go to state funerals abroad and stuff like that. This is to solve a big problem, and you're going to have the power to do it.
Yes.
You got it.
Yes. I did not take on this job to be a spokesmodel.
Well, you know, a lot of cabinet ministers get a mandate letter and they follow the mandate letter. I'm curious, you get to write your own mandate letter?
No, the prime minister writes everyone's mandate letter and we've discussed it. And I am really looking forward to working on some of the big challenges our country faces. And I do want to say one thing, mm-hmm. which is, as the prime minister said in his press conference today, a big part of the job is working closely with him and supporting the prime minister. You talked about the big jobs that I have. Mm-hmm. He has all the jobs in the whole government.
Right.
And it's going to be a privilege for me to work with him and help him bear that burden.
Is being the deputy prime minister and having this rather daunting intergovernmental affairs responsibility going to mean you're going to pick up the phone with Jason Kenney tomorrow and Scott Moe and maybe Doug Ford and try and get a meeting of minds in a hurry? What's your first priority steps here?
You know, that is an excellent question, Don, and obviously I've thought about it.
Yes.
And my view really is, yes, pick up the phone a lot. Yes, travel a lot. And truly, in the first instance, I think my job, the job of the federal government, is to listen hard to Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
Elections are real and elections matter. And this election sent us a message. And so
we have
to listen really.
Is that the message?
The message is that we have to listen harder.
Mm-hmm.
And the other message, and you know, I traveled around the country quite a bit in the election campaign. And what I was struck, one of the things I was struck by is that Canadians across the country have strongly held and quite different views about some of the core challenges our country faces.
Mm-hmm.
And the job of the federal government is going to be to try to, by, in the first instance, listening, knit our country together and have us be rowing in the same direction, or maybe I should say paddling our national canoe in the same direction when it comes to addressing those big challenges. Because truly, we do not have a choice. You know, there's that great Ben Franklin line, we must hang together or surely we shall hang separately. Mm-hmm. And that is the Canadian story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the federal government has a big job to do right now, finding ways to get us paddling in the same direction.
You don't want to be up the creek without a paddle.
No, you do not.
I do want to ask you, though, because Jason Kenney is an avowed Federalist. He does not want to take Alberta out of this confederation. Scott Moe's the same. Obviously, Doug Ford is, too. And so far, Monsieur Blanchet in Quebec doesn't seem to be really too interested in pushing that. So it's not like we're countries breaking up. But do you believe this Wexit thing is real out there, or do you think it's kind of a fringe issue?
Well, look, I think that is a question for Albertans in the first instance.
Mm-hmm.
I am glad to hear you listing all the strong Federalist feelings by the key Canadian players.
Yeah, they are.
Because, yeah, and I am absolutely a Federalist.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, you're shaped by the jobs you do. And one of the things that I learned as foreign minister is how challenging the world is today, both internationally,
mm-hmm.
but also all liberal democracies in the world today are facing huge challenges. And for me, the conclusion that really pushed me to is, like, there are only 37 million Canadians. Hugely challenging world, threats posed to the rules-based international order, greater threats than at any time since the Second World War. We have to be united in how we confront those big challenges. Climate change, a very important mm-hmm. one. Prosperity for the middle class, a hugely important one. And so we need to figure out a way to all be, I was going to say to all be on the same page. And I don't, but I sort of stopped myself a little bit because, look, we also need to be realistic. We as Canadians disagree about a lot of things. This is a vast country. There are lots of different points of view. And what I think we need to do is figure out, you know, on the big issues that we need to work on together to find a way to do that. And I truly believe that is what Canadians want us to do.
How will you find it easy to repair the damage with Doug Ford? I mean, your party spent most of its election campaign demonizing him and saying that Andrew Scheer was Doug Ford and that was a bad thing. How do you build that bridge back up?
Well, I'm going to let Premier Ford speak for himself when it comes to his attitude to the federal government. But I will say that because of the NAFTA negotiations, I had a few meetings with Premier Ford, and they were very productive, very constructive meetings. And I look forward, he is the premier of of the province that I represent as an MP. And I very much look forward to meeting with Premier Ford and finding common ground. And I think we can find it. And, you know, the other thing is, Dawn, again, reflecting on my my most recent past experience, it would be hard to find two administrations and two leaders whose sort of core political ideologies are more different than Justin Trudeau and Donald Trump. And yet, what we managed to do is to understand that Canada and the United States have to work together. We have this huge shared common border. We have this huge trading relationship. We have this huge security relationship. And I think it speaks well to both countries that we were able to understand, sure, there is a million things we disagree about, but let's find the areas where we need to work effectively together. And the fact that we were able to do that with the administration of Donald Trump says to me that with goodwill, Canadians can find a way to work together too.
Can you get this deal through Congress, or can Congress get this deal through before that window closes in like 10 days or less?
See, I was about to say to you, one of the jobs which I do not have is getting the new NAFTA through Congress. But what I will say is we, you know, both I and the Prime Minister have been in close contact with the Democrats. Speaker Pelosi thinks very highly of our Prime Minister. And with Ambassador Lighthizer, the USTR. On Sunday, I spoke to Chairman Neal of the Ways and Means Committee, the Democratic Chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. On Monday, I had a long conversation with Ambassador Lighthizer. What I hear from both of them is goodwill on both sides, a real desire to get to yes. Ultimately, it's their job to do that, but it is a good thing that they want to get it done, and we're going to be with them every step of the way.
My producer's going to scream at me for asking one more question, but I'm going to, because it's kind of hard for me to ask this. I couldn't help but notice Jim Carr. You worked with him on international trade, and he wasn't there, and he is a key part of any Western outreach program by this federal government as a Manitoba senior minister. Is he healthy enough to make a meaningful role and making your job easier to meld with these provinces?
I love Jim. I hope he won't mind my saying that. Mm-hmm. He is a fantastic human being, a true Renaissance man, and a fantastic representative of his riding and of Manitoba and Canadian. I have spoken to Jim quite a bit. I talked to him a lot during the election and quite a bit since the election. Jim is a very strong person. He is committed to being healthy, and he is committed to serving Canadians. The Prime Minister spoke today about this particular role that Jim is going to play, speaking for the Prairies. Right. And I look forward to continuing to work with him. He is an essential partner and ally in a huge number of things, by the way. But you are quite right, a very important voice for the Prairies and the West, and I know that he has the strength to do that. Of course, his health is the most important thing. So, Jim, take care of yourself.
Exactly.
But I know something that Jim said to me is the best way for him to get healthy is to keep on working.
Oh, good. Well, he's needed. So, anyway, fight on, Jim. All right. Thank you, Christopher Freeland. Always have a pleasure having you on. Hope to have you on again before I fade into the sunset soon. But
oh,
thank you.
Of course.
All right. Thanks again. Coming up, we scope the surprises and frame the challenges confronting the new cabinet. Our strategists see all after these messages. Please stay with us. Welcome back. Clearly a wholesale change in assignments would have the capacity to change the way this country's managed. That's surely worth the scrutiny of our seasoned strategists. Let's get them going. Susan Smith is the owner of Blue Sky Strategies. She tends to lean liberal. Michelle Coates is with Syntax Strategic. She tilts conservative. And Anne McGrath is with Hill Knowlton. She sways NDP. Welcome to you all. Surprise. Any surprises?
A few. Mona Forte in cabinet. I'm quite excited to see that.
No one's ever heard of Mona Forte before.
Member of Parliament for Ottawa Vanier, mm-hmm. extremely hardworking individual, mm-hmm. fluently bilingual, highly qualified, and worked with the Liberals on the campaign platform document. So clearly caught the attention of the Prime Minister and the team. And the other one, I think, not a surprise necessarily, but someone, a new face for Canadians, Anita Anand, who's yeah. the new Member of Parliament for Oakville. She was a star.
Procurement's a big deal.
Yeah, and she is a star candidate. She was a star candidate, but I'm told she is extremely impressive. Obviously, there will be some ropes to learn as a new MP and as a new minister, but I'm told she's extremely capable and will acquit herself very, very well in that
law
job.
Law professor, U of T, renowned specialist in corporate governance.
Yeah.
You're right.
It's a deep, the Prime Minister had a deep bench to, a deep pool of talent to draw from.
Well, he had some big holes to fill too, so. All right, Michelle, did you see anything that surprised you or pleased you or infuriated you or anything in
sort
between?
Sort of maybe a mixed bag. I mean, I thought it was kind of anticlimactic, to be honest. I mean, I think this was the worst kept cabinet swearing-in process ever. I mean, I think there were so many leaks and so forth that we kind of knew where the ships were going to land today. But
that's a good thing, we think.
It certainly helped with us today for prep purposes. But I would say I think a couple of surprises for me were the defunct portfolios. So, you know, it looks like sport seems to be gone.
Science
is gone. Democratic institutions.
And there's some new ones, too.
A couple of new ones. There's a nice campaign slogan built into a portfolio now under middle class prosperity, which was an interesting positioning, I think. So this is a campaign ready cabinet, I'd suggest.
It would be campaign ready. There's not a campaign for years.
Oh, 3-4 years still.
All right, Anne, you've seen a lot of these come and go. What jumped out at you?
Well, you know what? Cabinet swearing-in day is a pretty exciting day for a lot of us, but it doesn't have a huge, like, it doesn't ripple out much. It's, most Canadians are not riveted to this and
that's
are not,
true.
You know, exploring all of this. But it is an exciting day because I think it sort of gives you sort of a sense of opportunity and optimism and those kinds of things. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of really good good new talent, I think, good talent in that cabinet. There are some, I did think some things were a little goofy, like a minister of middle-class prosperity. Nothing against Mona Forte. I'm sure she's very capable, but I think it's a goofy title. And there were a couple of others that I thought were a little bit like that.
Well, Lisa didn't say, and those working to get in it.
exactly.
She's also Associate Minister of Finance, and I don't know that we've ever had an Associate Minister of Finance before and a female in that role. So I think what's interesting there is the middle class agenda is both an economic agenda, but it's also a social policy agenda, and I think it's been, you know, there's a finger that's been put on it. There is a Minister of Science. His name is Navdeep Bains. His portfolio is innovation, science, and economic development.
But it was a standalone one before.
It was a standalone before, but it continues to be a priority of that department, and I'm sure we'll see that reflected in the mandate letters. Another really interesting couple of names in cabinet, Mark Miller, who for many people, they may not know him. He's from Montreal, but he is the member of parliament that quietly learned Mohawk and stood up and asked made a member statement in Mohawk one day. To the shock of all of his...
And the translators were pretty shocked,
sure, and all of his House of Commons colleagues. And he's been named the new Minister of Indigenous Services. So he's earned his way and has worked hard at earning the trust of the Indigenous communities that he's come into contact with. Yeah. So I think that's good news,
Helps he hangs out with the Prime Minister socially, too, doesn't
he? He's a smart guy. He's a former veteran. He is a lawyer as well. So his credentials put most people's to shame, I think.
I don't want to dwell on it too much, but because the Prime Minister was dealt his hand, he had to work with it. But, you know, 17 Ontario ministers, 11 Quebec, and then literally 4 for Atlantic, 4 for BC, 1 for Manitoba. I mean, it's very Ontario-Quebec-centric, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But for your point, I mean, that's what he had to work with. And I think, you know, I just want to stop on that point and say for a second, I think when we're talking about outliers, one for me that really stuck out actually was Seamus O'Regan's appointment to Natural Resource Canada. And I have to say,
I was getting to that, Michelle.
Well, I'm gonna skip ahead to it if I can, Don, because it made me think as we were chatting and, you know, following Chrystia Freeland, who, you know, obviously is a very talented and capable minister. But I can't help but feel that there may have been a missed opportunity here with NRCan, especially when we're talking about this great divide on the natural resource sector side versus climate change. There's this big gap right now that we need to bridge. And I think that's going to be a big challenge for Trudeau and his government moving forward. And I can't help but feel that perhaps Chrystia Freeland taking over the energy file would have been a really interesting signal to send to those in Alberta and Saskatchewan that, look, I'm putting my top person on this file. Ooh, and I'm not quite sure that was.
I'm not quite sure
that's the message that was sent today.
So I think actually, you know, in a minority parliament, one of the most important positions is the House Leader, the government House Leader, and you need someone with, you know, a personality that is, you know, where he will reach out to people across the aisle and those kinds of things. And I think Pablo Rodriguez was actually a really good choice for that. And I'm actually hopeful that he will have a cooperative approach to working with the other House Leaders.
Yeah, he's got. Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to comment on Seamus O'Regan's appointment because I think. Most of us don't need to be reminded that there are natural resources all over the country, not just in Alberta and Saskatchewan. Newfoundland in particular has oil, it has mining, it has forestry. Those are all things that fall under that portfolio. And, you know, one of the things that has obviously hit the natural resource sector, the oil and gas sector in Manitoba, are hard times. Well, Newfoundlanders have lived through hard times many times. Mm-hmm. So I think Seamus O'Regan in that portfolio is a very interesting choice. It'll be, and it's a choice where he, you know, he represents a region that has felt similar pain and has similar challenges to the folks in Western Canada. So I wouldn't, I'd watch that space. I think it'll be very interesting.
I'll go to you on this one as well, Michelle. Like, I mean, John Wilkinson is not a name that, I mean, I had a lot of Albertans writing me saying, who the heck is this guy? Is he a good fit with that? Well, like, he's got Western sensibilities because he was born in Saskatchewan, raised in Saskatchewan, worked in the Saskatchewan government. Is that a sign that maybe this someone will understand the Alberta angst over environment? No?
Maybe, no. I mean, suddenly somebody's bio has become really important. Where you're born has become critically important in this dynamic, right? So I guess, I mean, the short answer to that is I think it remains to be seen, frankly. There is a lot of work to be done on that file. And I take your point about natural resources being across this country. But let's not pretend that, perception is often reality in this situation, especially in this business and in politics. Mm-hmm. And there is a very big perception issue happening right now out west, right? So I think right now, and this is something that Andrew Scheer is going to have to be thinking about, is holding Justin Trudeau to account. And the cabinet ministers responsible for those files will be critically important in the months ahead.
Smart to get McKenna out of that portfolio, by the way?
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, I would have to say that it probably was. And I say unfortunately because I think that the kind of criticism and abuse, frankly, that she endured there was unacceptable. And I hate the idea that you have to move somebody in order to try and mitigate that. But, you know, she really was a lightning rod. And I think that, moving her probably had to be done. I also think that, you know, on Seamus O'Regan or John Wilkinson or any of those kinds of things, I think the fact that they seem a little out of the box might actually be helpful, depending on how they approach it. Like, if they immediately kind of engage with Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba in particular, I think that they could actually bring some fresh perspective. So it's possible that could be good.
What did Jeanette Petipa-Taylor do to get kicked out of cabinet?
The skill Jeanette Petipa-Taylor brings to the table is her ability to work with caucus and work across the floor. Hmm. And that is something that the people that have been put in that House leadership position, Kirsty Duncan herself, Kevin Lamoureux, and there's one more whose name is escaping me at the moment. They're people who are able, they'll work with Pablo Rodriguez. They have good relationships. They have good relationships with caucus. They're, Jeanette in particular is fluently bilingual. So it's important to have really strong people in that capacity as well. It's going to be hopefully not too fractious a parliament, but I think that we have to expect that it will be occasionally. A couple things quickly. Jonathan Wilkinson, former parliamentary secretary and the minister of the environment, acquitted himself extremely well. Highly, really bright guy, kind of wonky.
That's a bad thing.
Kind of wonky, but that's a good thing. And Catherine McKenna moving to infrastructure and communities. Green infrastructure, I think, is going to be critical. And there she's able to carry forward all of the good and hard work she did in environment, but help try and get deals and broker deals and make things happen and get them done.
It's kind of weird, Michelle. Scheer didn't come out and say anything after this. What would you tell him to say?
Well, I would tell him first to pause for a minute because I think, look, there's some deep reflection that has to go on. Let's be honest. I think with Andrew Scheer and the party right now as well. He's under this sort of veil of a leadership review. But if I were him, I'd be thinking, if I were giving him advice, I would suggest, look, this is an opportunity for you as well to really think about your own bench strength. And, you know, Justin Trudeau has presented, I think, as I said, a campaign-ready cabinet. he should be considering what a campaign-ready shadow cabinet looks like for him. You know, he needs to be positioning his team, his roster, as a governing cabinet in waiting. So what does that look like? Needs to be thoughtful, I think, about that. Think about how he can diversify, call on some, you know, when I say diversify, I also mean decentralize the voices a bit, right? Because I think the CPC brand has been so closely associated to Andrew Scheer mm-hmm. that there's an opportunity here for him as well to have some other strong voices at the table.
All right, Ann, NDP reaction. I'm sorry, Jagmeet Singh did have a news conference or availability. I didn't hear it. What should he have said if he didn't say it?
I think that what he probably was talking about, and I didn't see it myself either because I was in another meeting, but I will say that I think probably what he said was that he's looking for action from these these ministers. And he's been saying that all along, right? That there are things that people agree on, like pharmacare, like dental care, like climate action, and that what we need to see is action on those things. So we talk about Catherine McKenna, for instance, being in infrastructure. She has to get the money out the door.
Interesting discussion. Thank you all. Thanks, see you John. Next
Thank
week.
You.
All right. La Québécois leader Yves-François Blanchet has reacted to Trudeau appointing a new deputy prime minister. Here's what he had to say.
I think Mrs. Freeland has shown in the past that she is, how shall I put it, very talented. She has experience now. However, the challenge that she faces now is quite one. The apparent division in Canada is a natural state for an artificial country as Canada, which regions have very divergent interests. So she might face a huge challenge. Let's see what happens with it.
Okay. Well, PowerPlay always welcomes your views on this or any other topic. Please reach us through social media. Options include Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and email. Coming up, shocking testimony of the Trump impeachment inquiry and furious reaction from the president. The latest after these messages. Please stay with us.
Everyone was in the loop. It was no secret. Everyone was informed via email on July 19th, days before the presidential call.
I say to the ambassador in response, I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky, President Zelensky, to do the right thing. So here's my answer. I want nothing.
All right, lost in the cabinet shuffle was the big news in Donald Trump's impeachment inquiry. Our eyes on the proceedings and reaction from the White House joins me with the latest other big story of the day. Richard Madden's our Washington bureau guy. All right, Richard, you were probably itching to get your story today, but this shuffle's kind of taken over everything. Ambassador Gordon Sondland, what did he say? And why is Trump going even more ballistic than usual?
Yeah, well, let's face it, Gordon Sondland is a Trump mega donor, and he was handpicked by Trump to be the ambassador to the European Union. So when he was testifying today, many expected him to really toe the White House line, but he did the exact opposite. You heard him earlier. He was naming names, and he was saying absolutely there was a system in place, a plan in place to pressure the Ukrainians to investigate the Bidens in exchange for political aid. Here's more of what Gordon Sondland had to say. Take a listen.
Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes.
Okay, so, Don, that is a very big deal. And as I said, he was naming names. He named Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in on it. The outgoing or former National Security Advisor John Bolton, acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, and, of course, Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani. It was stunning testimony today. And you can't call him a never-Trumper because he was a Trump pick. And Gordon Sondland absolutely stunned the room.
Wow. So a lot of buses have people thrown under him there. I'm curious, though, but he says everyone was in the loop, as we heard from that clip. I mean, that almost makes it like a White House-wide conspiracy, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly draws a direct link that goes straight to the president and coordinated by his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, to create this investigation against the Bidens. The Republicans, of course, were trying to poke holes in Sondland's testimony because it's well known that Sondland doesn't really keep notes or a record. And so they were suggesting this testimony you're giving today is completely unreliable because you have no written record. But the issue with this is that the White House and the State Department blocked Sondland from getting access to his records. He mentioned it in his opening testimony. So matter how you try to spin this, Dawn, this is not really a good day for Republicans. It pokes holes at a lot of their arguments that there's nothing to see here, that this is all a sham. When you have a Trump appointee testifying before Congress under oath to say these things, it's a rough day for the Republican defense.
And Trump reacted, as we saw, very vehemently. I'm assuming, is there other Republican reaction that sort of melting away their support for him, or is it still sticking?
Well, at this point, the Republicans are standing by their man. We haven't seen any Republicans publicly waver. And this is important because I think we all know how this movie is going to end, that the Democrats will draft these articles of impeachment. I think they've got more than enough evidence in their minds to draft those articles. We're going to see that process play out with a full vote on the House floor, I'm guessing within 2 or 3 weeks. But then Trump will be saved because at this point, you need a two-thirds majority in the Republican-controlled Senate to actually convict and oust the president. That means you need at least 20 Republicans to flip. I don't see that happening. And of course, Trump and the Republicans can say, what a waste of time. I've survived this. I survived Mueller. It's going to fire up the base. And then guess what, Don? We're into 2020.
Yeah, just curious, is any of this showing up in the polls in terms of Trump losing support? We've seen the rising support that says Trump did something wrong, but are we seeing people swaying their votes away from him because of this?
Yeah, so there's two ways to answer this. Number one, going into the impeachment debate, there were polls coming out showing that the support for impeachment or against impeachment is as divided as the country itself. I believe it's 51-4, 49 against. I haven't seen the needle move very much since then, but of course, this testimony today could change things, but it's unclear. A, how many Americans are paying attention? How many are clued in? How many have not made up their minds? So that is a real uphill challenge for the Democrats. They need to convince the majority of the American public that what the president did is impeachable. Intimidating witnesses, bribery, these kind of charges the Democrats are throwing around, it's unclear if it's sticking at this point.
All right. Ricardo, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Donald.
All right. The unscripted, nonpartisan, neutral view of today's cabinet is up next. Susan and Joel Denis are standing by. Please stay with us. Okay, welcome back. Well, they've seen more shuffles than they can count, and they know the ones that are good, the ones that are bad, and the ones that are ugly. Let's get our press gallery to discuss who makes the grade and what problems loom for the lightweights. Susan Delacorte, bureau chief of the Toronto Star, Joel Denis Bellavance, bureau chief for La Presse. You know, it wasn't sunny today. There was no sunny ways. They didn't have a nice walk up Rideau Hall. They sort of did this fashion cakewalk thing up there. And there was no because it's 2015. Bit of a different tone than the first go around.
Exactly. I was saying that this is like George Bailey in A Wonderful Life, you know, where he gets a second chance to do everything over again. And he kind of appreciates the life he had before. Mm-hmm. And so we saw, I think, a much more low key. I looked at the whole shuffle for clues about what they would do differently because they've got that chance, like George Bailey. So too much Trudeau. He now has a deputy. Mm-hmm. No more democratic reform. Nobody's going to be reminded of that promise anymore.
That's a good point, yeah.
A much more seasoned, stable No demotions like Jody Wilson-Raybould. Oh. No.
Pettipaw Taylor might argue differently.
A little bit, yeah. But
I was health minister. Now I'm deputy something or other.
But a reward for people who had been demoted and been better team players than the aforementioned Jody Wilson-Raybould. Melanie Joly she's back on the.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the upward career trajectory. I can't say that.
Trajectory?
Trajectory, yes. I actually liked the shuffle. I liked this one better than the 2015 one. The 2015 one was cinematic. This one was more serious, get down to work.
Yeah. Pragmatic. Pragmatic.
Nice, yes.
It's a great shuffle with one flaw. I think the Prime Minister didn't find a more forceful way to make sure Alberta and Saskatchewan have a clearer voice at cabinet tables. There was some way around it, and I think the Senate was one, but it was a complicated one, so we didn't use that route. But other than that, I think we could say that it's a great shuffle for the Prime Minister. And what I noticed, one thing also that I noticed is that Mr. Trudeau is quietly or subtly preparing his succession, because two of the pillars who got promotions, bigger files, are the ones who are most mentioned to be able to replace Mr. Trudeau one day. Chrystia Freeland, the ever omnipresent minister, and François-Philippe Champagne, who privately is, you know, not a secret. He wants to one day run that country. So Mr. Trudeau is giving them files, and you could see that they will be occupying, I think, a lot of this media space because they've got big files to deal with.
Yeah, I think you've told me before Champagne would be the next one, more likely the next one. And I went, really? But then you meet him and he is pretty charismatic
and energetic.
He's got no enemies, even among opposition parties. And that's a rare quality for a politician to have no enemies. Yeah. And now he's got to make friends within the Liberal Party to eventually become leader of that party. And he has one person advising him whom he meet on a regular basis. And that name is Jean Chrétien. And Jean Chrétien, you know...
Really?
He is his mentor. They have supper once in a while in Shawinigan, and Mr. Chrétien is close to him and even campaigned for him in this last election.
I can't see Champagne strangling anybody.
No, Shawinigan handshake.
Shawinigan handshake.
I sort of brought this up before, and it's kind of hard to do anything differently, but it is 27 of these ministers are Ontario or Quebec, and it's only a 36-person.
I'm from the Star. He's from La Presse. We don't mind that.
I got Calgary Herald roots, and I do. No, I'm just kidding. I guess if you don't elect them, you can't get them. Yeah. Geographically, it is a little...
Yeah, there is. I was surprised at Marco Mendicino, regular panelist on this show. Probably not
used
so,
to be.
Yeah, not so regular now.
Solid MP.
Yeah, very I was surprised solid. At Mona Fortier, who is my MP here in Ottawa, going in. So I think, but it's just a sprinkling of new talent.
And you mentioned that the West was not, you know, I mentioned that the West is not, you know, having the voice that it should have in that cabinet because they didn't elect any MPs. But the first order of business of the Prime Minister tomorrow is to meet Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi. What does that mean? Is he trying to lure him into a special role to advise him on Western issues? And he's also meeting the mayor of Vancouver, Mr. Kennedy Stewart. So that's interesting developments that we should take care of. And also the first cabinet meeting is happening tomorrow.
I don't know whether I should read anything into it, but David Lametti is the new justice minister, or the same justice minister. He's still there. And one thing he did in his pledge, he made a reference that he would respect judicial independence. And I don't know if I should interpret that, that he's had a sort of come to Jesus moment, if you will, and doesn't want to intervene with this SNC deferred prosecution thing. I don't know if you caught that or...
No, I didn't. And I'm glad you mentioned that because that's probably new because never in the past... I've heard the justice minister say that.
He's kind of skated around it.
Yeah, maybe that's a part of his new swearing protocol for him to make sure that, hey, I will respect the independence of the justice system.
You mean I noticed something that you two didn't notice?
Well, of course, you know more than
that. What do you make of these kind of, we were talking about these hokey titles. All right, you know, like Minister of Middle Class Prosperity and a Minister for the Coast Guard and a Minister of Diversity, Inclusion and Youth. I mean, should they narrow these down and make them into easy to understand what this mandate is all about?
I liked what Anne McGrath said in the previous panel. Some of them sound a bit goofy.
You think they sound a little goofy too?
Yeah, it reminds me a bit, just to be nonpartisan about this too. I'm not a big fan of giving fancy, stupid, brandy names to bills, you know? A big thing in the Harper government, you know, was everything was the cracking down on enemies of the government act. And this one, I think they are reining in, you know, the preachy, lectury thing that does annoy Canadians, even liberals. But these titles sort of sneak out that thing again.
The titles you mentioned tells me that the liberals are still looking at some clientelism. You know, you've got a minister for seniors, that's fine, it's perfect. But you've got ministers for middle class and prosperity and diversity and inclusion. What that does that mean, other than clientelism? And throughout this process, we've seen departments or ministers lose some titles. The sports ministry doesn't exist anymore. Now it's gone into the heritage ministry. And there's no longer a youth department, youth ministry, or with youth, a person responsible for youth used to be the prime minister. I'm not sure he will still handle that file, but some of it disappeared as the reform, democratic reform
is gone.
Is gone as well.
I learned a long time ago in Ottawa, if you say the opposite of it and it sounds ridiculous, then what you have is a platitude. You know? We're for national unity. We're against national unity, then it's ridiculous. And a lot of these fit into that, you know, category.
Pattern.
But you still like this better than the last one. It's probably, is it stronger than the one they started the election campaign in 10 seconds or less?
Yes, definitely.
I agree.
You can have another 9 seconds. All right. Thank you both. It's always a pleasure having you on to analyze this stuff. So we'll see you again next week. All right, that is your Power Play Day in Politics. Thanks for watching. Hope you can join us again tomorrow. Have a great evening.